each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for being here. The crowd, that means it's Wednesday. I don't know if this crowd is here the other days, but they turn out for Father Coyce. I'm Father Tom Coyce, happy to be with you on another episode of The Winds of Change. Once again, too, I'm afraid I'm going to have to wrinkle your brain. This is the hour of brain wrinkling. And to help me do so...
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
Yeah, we're starting to wrinkle their brains. Just in anticipation. Those of you who get my flock notes, you might have got a little forewarning of the show today. I have a wonderful guest today, two wonderful guests today. And if you don't get my flock notes, you could send an email to me at unlikeothernations@gmail.com, unlikeothernations@gmail.com, and just tell me you want to be put into the flock notes, and you get a little forewarning of the themes of the radio show. What I sent out this morning was just a special guest by the name of Rabbi Sammy. That's okay. You're going to have to help me, Rabbi, because it's wonderful to have you here. We have a mutual friend, which we got to get to know you here. I also have with me some people who are longtime listeners of The Winds of Change will remember a guy by the name of John. John, you got to say hello and tell him.
Hello, radio world. I'm Father Tom's brother.
We're the frickin' frack of the Coyes clan.
Are you a younger or older?
Older.
Okay.
He's older.
He got all the brains, though.
Yeah, he got the looks. He still got much more hair than I do. I'm always a little upset about that. Well, very good. When our mutual friend, Will Krueger, said that he has a friend that he would love for me to meet, and perhaps we could do some interesting radio together. I was very interested. Tell us a little bit of who you are, Rabbi, and we'll get into some of our hot topics here.
My parents called me, for the most part, Sammy, when I was in trouble. Samuel. When it was serious, it was my Hebrew name, Shmuel. And I was born and raised, for the most part, in El Paso, Texas. Grew up in a little town just outside of El Paso by the name of Isleta. My father died when I was 10 years old. Ah. And when I was 15, I accepted that Jesus was the Son of God, Israel's Messiah, and the Savior of the world. And in making that decision, and for several years, I resisted it real strongly, remembering that my father would tell me, you know, Jesus is not for you, it's not for me, it's not, he's not for our family.
Our people.
But my mother had come to faith. My mother was movie star, beautiful, very vivacious, a lot of fun. And she came to faith several years before my father died. Mm. And then when I was 15, I accepted, and almost instantly I knew I was to be involved in spiritual leadership. but I didn't like rabbis. I didn't like pastors. I didn't like priests.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. And because they didn't know anything about cattle or horses. I also grew up on the Fort Quitman Land and Cattle Company Ranch, about 60 miles outside of El Paso, right on the banks of the silvery Rio Grande River. And so as soon as I accepted Jesus, I knew I was to be in spiritual leadership. I prepared for that mainly through a Christian context. And then around 71, 72, I began to hear of Jews that were accepting and believing in Jesus.
And a Messianic.
I went to Israel in 1972, and my Jewish identity and heritage just exploded.
Yeah.
The completion of who Jesus, Yeshua is his name in Hebrew, and his name in Hebrew means salvation. His name in English means salvation. Jesus in Spanish, his name means salvation. And just the completion of that truth, that he was the Son of God, he was Jewish, and when he comes back, he will not be coming back, you know, to suffer the sins of the world, to take those sins upon himself. But when he comes back, he will come back as Mashiach ben David. That's the way the book of Matthew opens up. And
the
Son of David, and he will come to rule and reign.
I got to make a little pause. I don't want to, there's probably more that you can do, but I got to insert another personal thing. John and I, my brother, we both had a brother-in-law who was Jewish, and he resisted. I didn't push really too much, but every now and then I'd say he was married to our sister, and he enjoyed going to Catholic Mass and liked the Our Father. Maybe Morris says, I'm looking at John over here, because he, even before, right at the get-go, he started, I like that prayer. He liked that prayer, the Our Father. And I would often tell him, this is what I want to have you react to, Rabbi Samuel. I like Samuel. Because maybe you noticed that that email that I said at the beginning of the show, unlike other nations, comes from one of my favorite verses in the Bible, which is from 1 Samuel chapter 8, when God did not want the Israelites to have a king. But they insisted, we want to be like other nations.
Right.
And so that's when God says, okay, give him a king, sort of reluctantly. But he at first didn't want him to be like other nations and garnish themselves or clothe themselves with the trappings of what other nations were doing. And obviously one of those things they were doing was always electing kings. And so, but anyways, I would tell my potential convert Jewish brother-in-law, I would say, you know, so much of what I learn about Christianity and so much of what I learn about Judaism, if you were to accept Jesus as the Messiah, if you were to become Catholic, you don't have to reject anything positive that you now believe.
That's right.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it does.
There are maybe negative things that you'd put aside. What I mean by that is, somebody who's not Catholic would probably say, the Pope can't be infallible. Okay. Somebody would say, I'm going to put that aside. But that's a negative statement, something I don't believe. I'll put aside something I don't believe. But I have yet to discover something, a positive statement of belief that you have to reject. Are the Israelites the chosen people? We say yes. And our Catholic Mass is full of Old Testament references. So anyways, I had to throw that in. I appreciate your...
Did you do much study then in Israel when you were there? Did you? There must be rabbi school, like we have seminary,
right? Yeah, yeshiva. I took classes, courses, and then I started leading a messianic congregation in El Paso, Texas, by the name of Kehilat Ben David, congregation belonging to the son of David. I led that congregation for 12 years. And during that time, I was also very involved in pro-life, and I spoke in several Catholic churches, you know, on pro-life and the charismatic renewal that was taking place within the Catholic Church as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Knights of Columbus, Sammy.
Yes.
Please.
Yeah, I was made an honorary Knights of Columbus. I think there were 21 men. They had swords. And I walked underneath it, and they were recognizing me for my work in pro-life.
Beautiful.
And, you know, as a Messianic Jew, I strongly am a believer that life begins at conception. When that female seed comes into contact with male sperm, even medical science indicates there's a spark, there's a light, there's where conception takes place.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the new DNA and chromosomes, all that scientific analysis is there for us to examine. I got to share with you, too, my connection with Texas is from with a man who's now a Catholic. He was a Baptist minister from Waco, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And we met praying the rosary out at an abortion clinic. And it was in the days before the bubble zone laws were created. Mm-hmm. You know what, suppose they have them out by you, but we have them very strictly here in Illinois. In other words, you can't go within 300 feet of the front door,
right?
Bubble zone. And if you cross that imaginary line, you can be arrested. And, of course, that's where it was in the days when Operation Rescue was in full swing.
Yeah, I was very much a part of that.
Randall Terry was kind of the head guy. The guy I befriended was also on the board by the name of Daniel Vinzant. I don't know if you know, but anyways, he was a pastor in Waco, Texas, but I found him on the sidewalk, and he was praying the rosary, and he asked if he could pray the rosary with me and the people that I was with, and I said, sure, and then he revealed that he was a Baptist minister, and I thought of the introduction of the discipleship of Moses when Moses saw the burning bush, and he said, look at that strange sight. There's a bush that's being consumed by fire, that it's on fire but not being consumed.
Right.
So Moses had to go and take a closer look. So as soon as I saw a Baptist minister praying the rosary, I said to myself, there's a strange sight. I must go take a closer look.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's appropriate.
There it is. So anyways, he was the one who received Norma McCorvey into the church. He baptized Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, I remember her.
Yeah, who just died not long ago. So that in that bond of love for life and just the feeling that this is not the way our country should be going, you know, how else do you say that? But that brought us together and gave us a great bond. And I think our mutual friend, Will Kruger and his wife have been very strong advocates of right to life.
Yes, they have.
Over there.
Yeah.
So, John, do you have a few more questions? So let's see, should we?
Did you want to get into the national prayer issue right now? Or
I want to get into it as fast as possible.
Okay.
Okay.
let's address it right now.
As soon as I thought of having a rabbi on the radio show, I said, I got to get his take on something this fantasy. I'll just call it that, okay? I know it's a fantasy, but I'm going to present it as a dream. It's a political fantasy. And the reason I have a fantasy is because I have a worry. I have a worry.
I don't know.
Yeah, you didn't know about this, but I'm going to tell you. That was Bill Cosby. I think that's just snuck right in. Anyways, I have this worry about our society that we are in danger of losing our, what I like to call, Judeo-Christian heritage in this land of ours, vis-a-vis the deterioration of the Judeo-Christian heritage, vis-a-vis the strong influence or the dilemma that the strong increase and the presence of Islam is introduced into our culture in recent years. I'm going to start out with a quote. I got to paraphrase a quote that I recently saw. Valerie Jarrett, who was President Obama's chief of staff or chief secretary, she was really one of his right-hand men, close counsel to President Obama. And there is a email going around the via Spear, the internet, that there is a picture of her graduation picture. And you know how people write little notes about, you know, who's going to be the most likely to succeed and why am I, that kind of thing. She wrote on her graduation picture, Valerie Jarrett did, that as a Muslim, she's happy to be here in America, and she's hopeful for the Islamicization of America. And she sees particularly that the doctrine of religious freedom in America will help their cause greatly. I'm thinking, ooh, ouch, 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 ouch. That's using the doctrine of religious freedom.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
That's Lost in Space, in case you don't know that. Because I've seen this danger. I don't know. Am I blind? Am I?
Well, let me push back, Father. Religious freedom. She's just talking about the religious freedom we're afforded in America, and doesn't that apply to all religions? How can you pick and choose? You know, you favor Christianity or Judaism over Islam. Doesn't it apply to all equally?
Yeah.
Why would you have a problem with that?
Yeah. Because their doctrine of religious freedom doesn't fit our doctrine of religious freedom.
Yeah, that's correct.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
If they were to say, okay, you will have religious freedom here, and our American view of a religious freedom is pretty wide open, namely, we're not going to persecute you for your religion. We're not going to force you to be one religion over another. We're going to respect conscience rights, although we can see even now that conscience rights are not so well respected on basic things like whether or not you have to cooperate with a same-sex marriage wedding.
Right.
Just like the other day in the Supreme Court that came down to defend that baker from Colorado who didn't want to bake a cake for
a same-sex couple.
So anyways, it applies to all, but then all have to step forward and prove they're worthy of that right. And I'm just afraid that there's the doctrine of religious freedom in Islam is number one, not well developed, and that there are rules such as Takira and Rida. Takira and Rida are two Islamic principles that say you can kill someone who leaves Islam or that you can lie to a non-Muslim. Those two principles don't seem to fit with our American understanding of freedom. Take away religious, just freedom in general. And so my fantasy is to see a way of counteracting this danger with an operation of our own religious freedom, and that would be to make a national prayer, and a national prayer that religions could all embrace. And I think there is a, you could say, well, what kind of prayer could possibly be embraced by so many religions?
Yes, what would that be?
Are you talking about Avinu Shabbat Shemaim?
Translation?
Our Father who is in heaven.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, I tell you. Because I think the Our Father captures this a general wide sense of God that lots of religions could fall under. and so if we, if the trick would be, how do you get a government that's sort of handcuffed itself in a sense of not making any kind of religious proclamation?
Right. That's
how do you get it to make a religious proclamation?
That's our country. It will not. It's got to remain neutral.
I'm saying that the first part of my argument is wrong when I say, how could a government who's handcuffed itself by never making any religious proclamations is wrong? Because when you look through 200 years of history, the government has made religious proclamations.
There was a Judeo-Christian root.
To America.
Yeah.
To the United States.
The formation, the foundation of this country.
Yeah. Here's one that there's a case that comes to my mind when Trinitarianism was battling Unitarianism. Unitarianism was a kind of group of Christians. A Protestant minister by the name of Priestley was one of the founders of Unitarianism. And there was an argument, I think it was in Pennsylvania, but it might have been another state, that some of the Unitarians were saying, we're Christian. Some of the Trinitarians were saying, no, you can't be Christian if you don't accept Jesus as part of a Trinity. So it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court sided with the Unitarians and said that, yes, you can call yourself Christians as a Unitarian without bringing in the idea of Jesus and the Trinity. So that is a religious proclamation on the part of the government.
Yeah.
And I think the Supreme Court is dotted with a lot of time. It's usually in the negative. That case in Colorado, the reason why it went to the Supreme Court is because the Supreme Court in Colorado sided with the gay rights people.
Right.
And when the Colorado court said that you as a Christian must do what we are telling you to do, namely bake a cake for a same-sex marriage wedding, that's a religious proclamation, isn't it?
Yeah. And these people were known to be dedicated many years of Christian faith. It wasn't just a whim that would be against, quote, same-sex couples.
Yeah, because they I heard an interesting point that they made many cakes for that very couple, birthday cakes or, you know, anniversary cakes for their mothers or fathers or whatever. But when it came to their wedding cake, he drew the line.
Yeah.
Let's be clear. This court ruling did not speak to the issue of equal treatment under the law for, you know, gay couples, heterosexual couples. It spoke to specifically, and they narrowly addressed the issue of the hostility toward religion that the panel in Colorado that ruled, yes, you have to make this cake for this couple. And the baker objected. It was very narrowly
understood. The reason I bring it up.
So this will come back. The issue is not settled yet.
No.
It might be a small victory for those who believe. Yeah. You know, we need more, and we need to preserve religious freedom and conscience freedom. But it was narrowly written.
Indeed.
The.
Well, and I'd like to come back to my fantasy.
Okay.
And I want to see, because I'm looking for, I was worried that my fantasy would offend a lot of Jewish people.
No, I don't believe it would, because, you know, Yeshua always, when...
Yeah, go finish your thought. Yeah, we're going to take a break, Craig.
Okay. Well, he always spoke of glorifying and honoring the Father.
Yeah. Let's come back to that, because to me it's a powerful, it's an ingenious prayer. Mm-hmm. I love that prayer. Anyways, we're here. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change, one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Glad to be with you. Hoping you're not operating heavy machinery or driving, concentrating, because we are wrinkling your brain here this week.
And, I don't know.
Well, then you're going to have to learn. happy to have a new friend of mine. I'm going to call Rabbi Samuel, a new friend of mine. My brother John is with us here. We're talking about a fantasy that I've shared on this radio show before, and I so much want to get a Jewish perspective on the idea, and that is to help give our nation a little safety net. I don't know how to say it. The fear I have of the Judeo-Christian heritage of our nation being slipping away. Mm-hmm. Can be changed a bit, can be challenged a bit, if we as a nation came up with a national prayer, a prayer that everyone could pray together, those who will say they're God, they believe in God. If you're atheist, you don't have to pray it. We'd make that a obvious statement. If you were to pray the Our Father at public gatherings, the way we say the Pledge of Allegiance, or we sing the national anthem, you'd have to make some kind of introduction. Okay, those who are atheists or agnostic, please feel free. You don't have to say this, but those who do believe, join us in this national prayer, mm-hmm. the Our Father.
Okay, let me jump in.
Yeah.
Would this be a good time? If you're going to make this a national prayer, to me, it's highly identified with Christianity, but let's put that aside for a moment. Would a Muslim in this country accept it? Would you, Father Tom, have a problem with them saying, our Allah, who art in heaven, mm-hmm. and can continue on with the prayer? I don't think they'd accept it right from the start, but let's say they did. Could they change it to fit their culture?
If they were going to change the whole prayer into Arabic, then most likely you would have to change the word Father into Allah, an Arabic word. But I would want the rest of the translation to be faithful to the prayer that we know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that Islam thinks of or considers Allah as Abba or as Father.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think they do much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can they? Has anyone ever thought, is it possible to introduce that idea into their minds?
Because part of that Lord's prayer includes your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And one of the ways in Jewishness that we open our prayers is Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like you
just wrinkled my brain, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, the Our Father that we say at our Catholic masses doesn't use King. We refer to King a lot of other times, but not at that point. I think you could, as a national prayer, leave that part off for the time being.
No, I do agree. In some of the earliest manuscripts, that concluding part is not a part of the original text.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
Right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's the difference between Catholic liturgies and Protestant liturgies. Sometimes we separate it, and they often, if you're at a Protestant service, you have to be ready to jump right into that. But exactly. But staying with the idea of if we're going to say that we are for religious freedom, and there's no parameters about religious freedom, then the camel that's putting his nose under the tent that our founders didn't think about was a religion that doesn't believe in freedom or a religion that has a much different understanding of religious freedom. Namely, can America have a religion that believes in the takeover of religion of America?
in 1967, biblical, charismatic, Protestant, Catholic history records what was called the Jesus People Movement.
Right.
And thousands of young people were believing in Jesus along with thousands of Jewish people. And that really is some of the beginnings of the modern Messianic Jewish movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in the early 70s that there was the need for a congregational expression, the heritage, the identity of it. I'm really feeling that there is going to be another outpouring of God's Spirit. And I'm already hearing of Arab Muslims in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Iran, that are having dreams and visions of Jesus being not only Israel's Messiah, but the Savior of the world. Mm. And I think as that takes place, there will be a real outpouring of God's Spirit. But will it totally transform America, yeah. the other nations? Will it be big enough? Will it give the impact like mm-hmm. what took place in 1967? And I'm part of that Jesus People movement as well. Mm.
It's a challenge. I sort of mean it to be my fantasy. I sort of mean it to be a challenge because it's hard to challenge. You can't just challenge Islam in a sense here in the United States by saying you can't be here.
No.
That's one way of approaching it. And in a certain sense, that's in a certain sense how Poland is trying to counteract what's going on in Europe. There was huge marches in Poland saying that here Christ is king. If you don't accept Christ as the king, your religion won't fit our culture. Mm-hmm. I think they're in a different socio-political economic situation than the United States is, and maybe that is the will of I could see that being an option for them to play. Here in America, we're not going to do that. Nor do I think we should in this sense.
No.
But challenge Islam in some way. It would come from outside of Islam. If the Our Father was a national prayer, this challenge and you were able to say at a public gathering, or a baseball game, or a football game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the controversies over the Star Spangled Banner would be nothing compared to the rejection of the Our Father.
You got that right.
But it could be beautiful. It could meditate on God in the sense that there's a vision of God that will unite us as brothers and sisters. Bingo. That's what the Our Father really tries mm-hmm. to do. That imams or Muslim leaders would say, you can't do that. I think that could be a line in the sand that would say, okay, if your view of God does not allow the idea that we are brothers and sisters, then you have to form your own. You have to go and form a country or a nation without that sense of religious freedom. I think you're right, John. They would argue against it.
And atheists and agnostics would argue against it, too. They would not like to stand at a football game and say a prayer, mm-hmm. a national prayer. I'd love it, but you're going to run into millions of people who will object to that.
Are there a few more that would push it? And that's what democracies are all about.
The majority.
Interesting.
So maybe we could let's put that aside because there's another interesting aspect I think of a lot in terms of my Jewish roots as a Catholic. And with Rabbi Sammy here, I got to go into this topic. I'm learning more about the kinds of sacrifices that were a part of the ancient world, the Old Testament Jewish world. And I stumbled upon a few different kinds, namely the Ola sacrifice, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, the burnt offering.
The burnt offering, mm-hmm. where you'd bring a bull or a cow or
a sheep,
a goat. You burn the whole thing up. Yeah. That's where the word Holocaust comes from. It's a Holocaust offering. And when modern mind thinks, English-speaking people think of Holocaust, we think of what happened to the Jewish people in the Nazi concentration camps. And there was a Jewish scholar by the name of Elie Wiesel, who is, at least I'm told, that he was the one who coined the phrase Holocaust for what happened to the Jewish people in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, he himself was a Holocaust survivor.
He himself was. And so there's this kind of, when I, if somebody were to say to me, what did the Jewish people do in the temple when they made their sacrifices? I probably would have thought of the olah, the full burnt offering sacrifices. That would have been it. But I, and in a further study, and this is what maybe you can help me understand a bit, Rabbi Samuel, there are others, and especially the one called the Mincha, Minchak. Well, is that if I'm saying Minchak?
Mincha, the grain.
The grain offering, or the grain sacrifice.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, but I want to come back to that because as a Catholic, this is like exploding ideas in my mind, mm-hmm. and it makes me love the Mass more. That's basically what I'm going to say. But we're going to take a quick break here. Wow. I'm Father Tom. Oh, boy. Right before the break, we wrinkled your brain. That's pretty good, Nick. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Save the dates for Prairie Fest. Friday through Sunday, August 10th through the 12th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois.
More info at ByzantineCatholic.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others, Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
All human life is precious, and all humans are created equal, but not all vitamins are created equal. One company's vitamins stand taller than the rest. At For Life Vitamins, we promote health from the womb to the tomb and support the pro-life movement. Dr. Christosik created For Life Vitamins to optimize your healthy habit of taking vitamins and protect the health of unborn children, the infirmed, and the elderly by donating 10% of sales to support Father Bush's life-changing ministry. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 888-879-1190. Dr. Christosik has helped over 13,000 patients reclaim their health with For Life's vitamins. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190. Simply change your vitamin company and save a life. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coyce here, and I have with me in the studio today a wonderful new friend, Rabbi Samuel from Texas, I find. That's good enough. Everyone knows you in
Texas. I can
Texas.
Detect the Southern accent there a little bit, that Texas accent in your voice.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah.
I've lost a lot of it, but some of it.
Some still there.
I got to describe this to the art radio audience. When Rabbi Sammy walked in, he had a Texas cowboy hat on.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty classy.
Yeah, you know? I'm wearing a kippah, and
a little closer to the mic.
I'm wearing a kippah or a head covering within a Jewish life culture tradition as well, and I told him, that's what you call double cover, my Texas Ranger type cowboy hat.
That's right. Oh, hey, your baseball team did pretty good last year. Rangers, you know?
The Houston Astros.
That's right.
Hey, world champions.
Okay, since you're here and you have greater Jewish probably background and knowledge than I do, but I'm learning some things about what we do in our Catholic Mass, especially, that are so rooted in Jewish tradition. This is a little shocking statement, too, and I have a proposal that what we do in the Catholic Mass is maintaining and holding the Jewish traditions much more than the Protestant liturgies do. Protestant liturgies are basically songs and sermons, and every now and then they have communion service. But I'm very proud of the fact, and I feel called to say, to be obedient to God, to be obedient to the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament, the Mass satisfies what God is wanting. because going back to this, what God wanted the Israelites to do in the temple, I said at the beginning before the break that when I thought of sacrifices in the temple, I basically thought of the Holocaust, the Holah sacrifices, the full burnt offerings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I recently learned another one called the Minhag,
yeah.
If I'm saying it right, which kind of is translated sometimes as food or meat, even though it didn't have to have, first it was translated as meat offerings, but a Minhag didn't have to have meat from
That's
an
right.
animal.
That's right.
It would be more grain.
Grain.
Or cereal. Like,
wheat or mostly wheat, but including barley.
Mm-hmm. And what would the Levites do with the grain?
Well, in all of the offerings, the burnt offering, olah, that offering is totally consumed by fire. Neither the priest nor the offerer participates in receiving any part of that offering. It is a total dedication to God. And messianically, Yeshua completed and fulfilled. He gave his whole life on that execution stake that we also refer to as the cross. And he was that total offering before God. He fulfilled what that burnt offering was about, the sin offering, chatat, and the grain offering, and the peace offering, and the guilt offering. All of those were to be given with thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And if you did not present the offering either as the priest or as the offerer within that dimension of humility, and this is under the first covenant or, quote, under law, Mosaic Torah, if you did not approach that offering with humility, with contrition, with repentance, with faith, then offering the different offerings as many times as you wanted really had no effect. The grain offering, the mincha offering, mm-hmm. was considered more of a thanksgiving offering. And it was an offering that part of the offering was burnt on the altar. The other part was given to the Kohanim, or the priesthood, or the offerer would also receive part mm-hmm. of that grain offering. It is also known that's the root of first fruits. When Yeshua was raised from the dead, 3 days and 3 nights after his execution, they went to find him, and he had already been raised from the dead. He is the first fruits from the dead, and by that, first fruits, someone dying to never die again. And so that grain offering is symbolic of the root of what we share in Judaism, Kiddush, the drinking of the wine and the drinking of, or the eating of the bread. In Catholicism, in Protestantism, it's known as a communion, maybe different somewhat in Catholicism, but that is still the root of where that kiddush, that communion, out of the Passover Seder as well.
Well, it is quite different in Catholicism versus Protestant Christianity because we have the miraculous or mysterious, mystical belief in now that the grain offering becomes literally the body and blood of Jesus.
Now,
his
would
way
that be
of staying
called
there.
Transubstantiation?
Yes.
Is that right?
That's the word Thomas Aquinas gave it, and we stick with it.
Yes.
He gave it in the 1300s. There's in reading about this minhag, the grain offering, that where the Levite priests would lift up the grain and offer it to God. It's exactly what I do as a priest at our Mass.
Yep.
I take up the host and I lift it up.
And frankincense is sprinkled on that as a sweet aroma, a flavor, a savor to God.
You know, some churches, and sometimes we do the incense at that time of lifting up,
right?
But I don't do it that often. Maybe I should do it more often. You're encouraging me to do it more. But here's something that we have in Eucharistic Prayer 3 that blows my mind away, too. Many Catholics may not know that there's four basic, there's more than that, but there's four basic Eucharistic prayers we have, and they're all based on a lot of Old Testament references. But in Eucharistic Prayer 3, we find this phrase, so that from the rising of the sun to its setting, a pure sacrifice may be offered to your name. That's so that from the rising of the sun to its setting, a pure sacrifice may be offered to your name. And of course, the rising of the sun to the setting of the sun is from east to west, which is kind of a way of saying everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just in Jerusalem, it's not just in Rome, it's not just in Chicago, it's supposed to be everywhere. And if you look at first chapter of Malachi, the prophet Malachi, first chapter is an expression of the same thing. The prophet Malachi is mad at the priests because they're offering in the temple impure sacrifices. And Malachi says, You are offering in the temple blind sheep or lame sheep. And so, well, what's wrong with that? If they're going to be killed and burned, why not kill or burn the one that's blind?
Yeah, the offerings but had to be offered without a blemish. And again, Yeshua, Jesus completes and fulfills that as a perfect sacrifice without sin.
Yeah. He's the unblemished one.
Right.
He's the unblemished one. And that's where, for me as a Catholic, I'm saying to myself, oh, the prophet was prophesying that someday there will be a pure sacrifice offered from east to west or from the rising of the sun to its setting, which means everywhere. And that pushes the idea in the Old Testament, in the Jewish world, you had to go to Jerusalem for your holocausts. And you just didn't do them in the temples. Am I right in thinking that the distinction between your synagogue, your local synagogue in whatever town you lived in, and the temple was the difference between your learning and your sacrificing?
Correct.
Is that about it?
Yeah. Yeah, since there is no temple right now, there is no sacrificial system that is going on outside of what we would consider that grain offering or that kiddush, that communion.
Do synagogues today around the world do a grain offering?
I mean, well, it's called kiddush, the bread and the wine. And, the wine, a symbol, there's the symbol of blood, it's red, and the bread is a symbol of stability, a staple, thanksgiving for God's provision of food, and it's also a thanksgiving that has, since there is no sacrificial system, this is considered a link to the grain offering. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I got to say then, as a priest, we're supposed to have Mass every day. You know, and if a church doesn't have Mass, then there's something missing. In Protestant churches, they don't always have a service every day.
Yeah.
And they may not have a communion service every week. Mm-hmm. I remember the big convert to Catholicism, a guy by the name of Scott Hahn. Before he became Catholic, he was a Presbyterian minister. And he, in studying the concept of a covenant in the Old Testament, and how we should do this in our services, he increased the numbers of communion services. It was like four times a year. He says, well, let's do it once a month. Mm-hmm. Let's do it 12 times a year. And then he increased it to every Sunday. And a number of the people didn't want it. But a bunch of the people said, hey, this makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And some of the people says, Pastor Hahn, you seem to be moving us in a Catholic direction. And he said, no, that's not me. I'm a son of a Presbyterian, and my wife is a son of a Presbyterian minister. You'll never see that. Well, he had to eat his words because he was moving. He was discovering how much continuity there was within the Catholic Mass.
In observant Judaism, we have what is called Kabbalat Shabbat, the evening, Friday night service, and the Kiddush is served. And then on Saturday morning, Shaharit Shabbat, the morning Sabbath service, the Kiddush, the bread and the wine are served.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure...
And that's every week.
Every week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure in the synagogues, as well as in many Protestant churches, as well as we're experiencing Catholicism, our numbers are going down. And the crowded masses that many of us remember, or the crowded synagogues, as many Jewish people probably remember, are no longer around today.
That is so true.
And I've seen many pictures of many Protestant churches will have 10 or 15 families that keep the church open.
You know, I came to Chicago to fill in for my dear friend, Rabbi Barry Budoff, who passed away 4 years ago. The synagogue has been without a rabbi all this time. This is my fourth trip.
Mm.
And they are determined to keep the synagogue going. I'm trying to help them find a rabbi that certainly not to replace, but would fill that need. But it is so true. In my travels, I see a lack of attendance, finances in the synagogue.
Indeed. I think, John, where are you going to? We're running to the end here.
Oh, we're at the end.
We are.
Goodness.
This went too fast.
No.
We got to see if we can continue this on another day.
Fascinating.
God love you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coys. We've had Rabbi Samuel and my brother John joined us with us today. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Thank you for the honor of being with you.
When the world makes no sense, do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. what you say when right from wrong has become so obscure. It does not take that long, can you see?